2015, an elite DFS Army Commando unit formed to bring high-level DFS strategy to the masses. Today, hated by DFS sharks and lineup sellers alike, they continue their quest to turn Joe into DFS pro.
Saturday edition of the Tacos Fast 40 podcast, presented to you by DFSArmy.com. And tonight we're headed to Richmond. It's an impound race, meaning it's a whole load of fun for us because we get to wait around not knowing whether or not the lineups we're making will even count. You see, in an impound race, the practices are before qualifying and only before qualifying. But you're not allowed to touch your car after qualifying or get it out of qualifying trim like they do oftentimes when they have the first practice before qualifying and then the two practices afterwards, where they get rid of the qualifying trim and have meaningful practices in race trim. With these sorts of races, it's a condensed schedule, you know, no truck series, and you know, really quick in and out. We ended up only having one practice session for each series here. The Xfinity series only had one scheduled mega session, and we got the worst of the two practices for Cup that we got to have, because it was a morning practice for a night race, which is not the best thing you can do. The temperatures aren't changing a whole lot here, so it's not all that big of a deal, but still, the racing, there's a lot of threat that we would, you know, we would not have a race last night or today. They would all have to be pushed forward. We'd end up racing on Sunday anyway, but, you know, the weather forecast was a little bit conservative because it ended up not even really hitting the track until the entire race was over. You know, for a while we expected the Xfinity race just to get to stage two, and right at the end of stage two, there was a little sprinkling and whatnot, but end up sneaking the race through there without rain. Tonight it should be a lot. It should be a lot safer, you know. Right now I'm seeing some rain possible at like 10 or 11, but they should definitely be able to get the race in. If not the complete race, then at least get to stage two, and you'll probably go a ways into stage two before they'd have to call it. And even then, the chances are like 20 to 30%. Chances are it's going to be just fine. So, now before I get into talking about Richmond Raceway here, of course, as always, gotta remind you guys that at DFSArmy.com, we've got our complete NASCAR coverage on deck every week for you. Trucks, Xfinities, NASCAR Cup Series. You already know how it's done. Just recently made some nice additions to the research station that's got all the fantasy NASCAR stats that you could ever desire, and all packed into one nice little tidy sheet there. And of course our domination station lineup optimizer, that's, you know, really, really, really nice to have. Some sports like Xfinity, you pretty much have no choice but to optimize. Just not enough time, and we just had a pretty darn good Xfinity races, you know, the last few weeks. Those were some really good ones for us. I really personally needed Allgaier yesterday. He was looking like he was going to separate me big time, but that is what it is. I'll take my my double cheeseburgers worth of earnings and parlay it into today. But yeah, you know, the truck series is a lot of fun. Definitely got to try it out if you never tried that before. Even with the smaller contest sizes, still, you know, packs a lot of punches because, you know, the trucks, they always like to crash and stuff. A lot of entertainment value that goes with that. And of course, your subscription to DFS Army includes all of our fantasy sports content. Baseball, basketball, they're all covered on the Domination Station. They each have their own respective research stations, along with tons of other tools, VIP articles, and coaching channels, so that you can ask us, you know, just how things are going, Get some personal coaching. If you need help with the slate, we're here to help you. And yeah, dfsarmy.com, promo code TACO to help support the pod and support my face. And yeah, that'll do it. So looking at Richmond here, we've got a track that I'm not a huge fan of, really. It's sort of like Darlington. We'll kind of, I'll show you a little tool that we've added to the research station. Actually, I added a few this week, but we did add a pretty cool tool that allows you to just look at correlations in between each track, just to help you narrow down which tracks you're really focusing on for, you know, the upcoming tracks here. Like for this week, for example, I really want to be looking to Phoenix because, again, with all the changes in the aerodynamic package, we want to be looking at this year's data. And, you know, Phoenix is the most similar track. You know, Martinsville is also a very short, but it's kind of a different sort of track there. So, yeah, you can see, you know, pretty easily what kind of tracks we're going to be using when making our selections and which ones not to. Like, most of the time it's just, like, plate races pretty much. But, you know, it is interesting to see which tracks come in and rate in higher than others. So, like, for Richmond here, you know, the similar sort of flatter, shorter tracks do come in big time. You know, your Phoenixes, your Darlingtons, Loudon's definitely comes in big time. Loudon actually rates out the highest as far as correlation with Richmond, which makes a ton of sense. But Phoenix right there, Dover actually right there. I know that Dover is quite a bit steeper than Richmond, but it does also have a much closer, it's just really close to it in size and sort of the style of racing that goes on there. So just one of the many tools I added this week that you guys can go check out. Last week, you know, I added the lap-by-lap practice breakdowns. This week I've changed the dominator point tracker, where it just shows you how many dominator points each guy got at different tracks. I changed that to dominator point percentage, and I think that's a lot better way to look at it, because, you know, many different numbers of laps and stuff at different tracks, and that helps you just you know, put everything together in scale, and you can really see who, you know, where the dominator points are going to. That's going to be huge this week at a 400 lap track. So that's something else, you know, that's something to definitely check out and reference constantly as you're looking through your guys and just seeing how much upside they have. You've also recently added the average speed ranks, which, you know, it's a new thing that we're doing this season, where we take things like the average green flag speed, average fast, the fastest laps, the 10, 20, 30 lap averages, and we just keep track of those for the guys for this year. You know, a lot better than our traditional loop data. And you know, the average speed ranks thing, you know, we've got two splits set up right now, one for just all the races in the 2019 season, just overall how good are they doing, and then one that was just for Phoenix, since we're going to be looking at that one. You know, not as much point in looking at the intermediate tracks where the, you know, they have the tapered spacer and all that. This, pretty much this and Martinsville are the only ones that, are really, really close to Richmond, and, definitely Phoenix more so than Martinsville. So going to want to look at the Phoenix race, you know, that track is, similar for a few reasons, almost the same size. It's very, you know, it's very, very lap turny, very, very predictable, pretty much one racing lane to go in on. Of course, Phoenix does have that a dog leg, but, you know, things like the banking, the turns are all pretty darn similar when looking at the two tracks there. I know that, you know, Richmond is pretty narrow, I would say, but we really don't see a lot of cautions. We don't see a lot of people go out. You know, I haven't checked recently here. I know, let me check again here real quick, because sometimes they have the caution props out. I know the manufacturer props are out, and it kind of looks similar to last week. Yeah, I think they are out. 7.5, that was pretty much what I was expecting. So, you know, the lowest we've seen this at was like 6.5. So this is, Pretty much going to be a green flag race. It's not really short track racing like a Martinsville or a Bristol would be. I didn't even use those tracks in the short and flat track stat splits that I have up here. Xfinity was actually a lot better for using corollary courses and stuff, because they have Iowa, which is like a spitting image of this track, just very, very similar. Actually, when you run all of the tracks together in Xfinity, it rates out the highest with Richmond. But they also have the, I think it's Gateway, where it's the 1.2-mile track, and it's supposed to be like a mixture of a Darlington, Richmond, and Martinsville? It's Dover, So like Darlington, Dover, and Richmond all put together in a track. That one's a really nice, comp one to look at there. But for a Richmond and track similar to it, I really tried to just use Phoenix, Loudoun, and this track, Richmond. Those are the only tracks that are really, really, really similar. Although with the new correlations tool, I would not be against adding some tracks that correlate in really highly. Dover actually rates in really high, almost up there with Loudoun. And Homestead also is one that I see. Richmond rates out, it correlates with Homestead more than any other track does with Homestead. So that's kind of fascinating there. Pretty much everyone's driver ratings are 92% similar on the two tracks. And that's over the last 3 years, DNFs excluded, and only using the guys who have played all of these tracks a very similar amount and haven't had big equipment changes in that span too, or if they have, that's been adjusted for and kind of taken away. So it's going to be a really cool tool to look out for in the future. I'll probably start adding a split that's just correlated tracks, where I just use the tracks that are most correlated, and run the numbers for that, of course, adjusting it to the number of laps in the race, as always, like we always like to do here. Looking at Richmond a little bit further here, it rates out third in average laps finished. Like I said, it's a real lap turner. Last repaved in 1998, 14 degree bankings in the turns, average speeds around 100 miles an hour or so, average lap times like the 22, 23-ish sort of range, but with the bigger spoiler this year, it's going to be racing a lot differently. A lot of dirty air to be thrown around, and you see guys with really good cars that'll just flounder in dirty air, and they'll get stuck, and it's really, really hard to pass the guy out in front. That's kind of always been a thing here at Richmond. We have seen some very, very high lap totals put in here, and lots of dominator points taken by guys, and the pole sitter actually fares pretty well here. It ranks fourth in both average pole laps led and fast laps, with an average of 103 laps led going to the pole sitter and 42 fast laps going to the pole sitter on average, only trailing Kansas, Kentucky, and Charlotte in that regard. And most of the time that pole sitter is probably one of Kevin Harvick, Kyle Busch, or Martin Truex Jr. I just have a feeling there. Other than that, it runs a little slower. Very, very similar speeds to Phoenix and New Hampshire. Those tracks have a lot in common. Of course, Phoenix has been repaved a little more recently, but still raced a little bit slower, about 5 miles an hour slower. Coming in just under 100 miles an hour, as where Richmond comes in just a little bit above 100 miles an hour on average. But this track is a little bit shorter at 0.75 miles, but it plays a lot more like a 1 mile track than it does a 0.5 mile track like Bristol or Martinsville. Even though the lap numbers are getting, they're kind of similar to Bristol and Martinsville, with there being a whole bunch of laps. This has the third most laps of any track, tied with the Coke 600. So it's pretty much a smaller version of the Coke 600. Same amount of points to go around. And 12% of the races run under caution, sixth lowest of the 22 tracks. This is going to be a track where track position is huge, absolutely huge. We might see, you know, a lot of pit strategy come in here where guys will choose track position over fresh tires. And, you know, that could, you know, with the ability to block people here. Like, we've seen guys like Ryan Newman have success here in the past. Guys like Joey Logano, also very good at this track. Of course, he was cheating to win here before, but you still get fantasy points for guys that are cheating, so I'm always on board for that. Something very interesting that it comes when you analyze the two different sites and how the scoring is going to be different. So look at the pole sitters. This is the fifth best track for DraftKings pole sitters, but only the 16th best track for FanDuel pole sitters. And it was not just looking at total laps and stuff, because obviously it has more laps, but it's actually the percentage distribution of fantasy points to the pole sitter there. When you look at just guys in the top 10, it ranks fourth on both sites. So you're going to want to get tons of guys in the top 10. They have a great advantage as to where they have track position already. And they got to qualify, so you know, if you're up there in the first place, you've probably got a pretty darn good car right now. When you look at guys 30th and back, this is where it's very different. So this actually ranks 21st on DraftKings in average DraftKings scoring, guys starting 30th or worse. As we're on FanDuel, it's third. And the only two tracks that are better than Richmond here, according to FanDuel, when you're starting 30th or worse, is Bristol and Martinsville. It's very clear the way that it goes there. The fact that there is a total laps score that counts for just as much as laps led. Whenever there are 400, 500 laps, it means that on FanDuel, everyone's scores are going to be very, very similar. So, like I kind of usually say about FanDuel, if you have any crashes, your lineup is completely done. And for some reason, even though place differential is only worth half as much on FanDuel, it's actually, just with the way that things work out over there, you know, the place differential plays actually matter more than they do on DraftKings. It's different at different tracks. Like, for example, at plate races, the DraftKings guys starting the very back do outscore the FanDuel guys pretty significantly. That's just kind of there. That's kind of because there is just such a random variance factor. But with this being one of the more predictable tracks, and one of the tracks where the guys up front are staying out front, and the guys in the back are just going laps down and not doing great, you will pay. You'll be able to punt on FanDuel. You'll be able to play one of those 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 guys, no problem, as long as they finish the race somewhat and get all of those just laps finished. I think that's going to be a key to success. There's no one that you can't afford on FanDuel, because you can pretty much just punt whomever, like a Ty Dillon or something, and be great. But on DraftKings, you're going to want to nail all the dominators. You can't not nail the dominators. But with this race package, unfortunately, it's kind of like really been randomly distributing fast laps, so that sucks to see. It's really hard. It's really been getting harder to predict where the fast laps are coming from. And you know, if guys start drafting off each other, even just a little bit, these fast laps might start going to guys that we're just not used to them going to, like the Austin Dillons and Jimmy Johnsons of the world. But like I said, when we did, Texas, you know, that race is probably where we'll see the most drafting all season long. So I wouldn't worry too much about that. Moving forward. So the strategy for Richmond is based on, first it depends on who goes to the back after impound here. So, you know, it couldn't negate the whole purpose of this pod. So I might as well keep it a little bit short just in case, you know, the whole field gets messed up and we have a situation like last year where 13 guys are sent to the back. But, you know, assuming that it doesn't get messed up too much here, we do have a lot of very, very obvious place differential plays. And over the last few weeks, it seemed like the way the last few weeks have been on DraftKings is like the super expensive guys have all been place differential plays. But now the very, very expensive guys are, for the most part, all starting in the top 10. But you do get Ryan Blaney starting way back in 29th, Ryan Newman starting way back in 31st, and Ty Dillon in 30th, Denny Hamlin in 18th, Clint Bowyer 21st. Almirola 15th. These are all guys that are going to move up some. Di Benedetto 27th also, Byron 19th. So lots of options this week. There are only a couple of plays that really stick out as like the super chalk here, and that would be Newman for $6,900. Nice. On DraftKings. And I think he's a little bit more expensive on FanDuel, but it doesn't really matter. He's going to be super popular on both sides, starting 31st. He has a knack for top 10-ing here whenever he doesn't run into trouble. And at Phoenix, his 10-lap and 30-lap averages ranked 11th of all the drivers there. So that's very impressive. I kind of like to, you know, I like to see that. Newman has looked a lot better over the last few weeks. Didn't really put many laps down in practice, and his speeds were not great at all, 27th on the board. But with first practice, I think a lot of guys expected to get second practice in, so it's kind of tricky using first practice this week. We've seen kind of in weeks past how sometimes the first practice is a little bit misleading and the second one's where you want to go, but Mother Nature decided elsewhere, so that's what we've got to work with. So I wouldn't be too worried about people that have bad practice times here. I really am not. I like the fact that it knocks down their ownership. I'm going to definitely fade the guy who's number one on the board, because that always gives people too much ownership than they're worth. And he's also just been a piece of crap lately, Kyle Larson. And if I'm going to play people based on practice times, I'm going to probably use the 20-lap guys. Try to avoid the guys that it, with the 10-lap speed, just because everyone sort of sees that. I'm also looking at 5-lap speed also, because the restarts, there aren't going to be many restarts here, but they're going to be absolutely key. Your initial, looking at fast lap, looking at the 5-lap speeds, because you really, really do want to have a fast car off the get-go, because long-run speeds don't matter as much on this track. Not really. I mean, we saw in the Xfinity Series that Bell had a longer run car, and it was amazing in practice, and he had dominated the last few years at that track, but he just got stuck behind. Of course, a different package that they race in Xfinity, but it's a lot more similar to the Cup Series this week than it is when they're doing the tapered spacer package. But just with how the track is, we saw some inferior sort of drivers being able to just check out in the clean air, and they were gone until someone threw a caution. But we've also seen guys that have that obviously have a longer run setup, going behind a guy that had a short run setup, and those short run guys just being able to block them forever. And if anything, either third place comes up and passes them, or they just manage to use traffic to keep themselves out in front. So, with the restarts and stuff, you can see what Justin Allgaier did right off the bat in the Xfinity race. He started in seventh, but worked his way up very quickly, very early, using those restarts. And that put him out there in front. Cole Custer also. And that led to them leading tons of laps and being the guys you absolutely needed, even though they were not really ones that you would expect to lead laps coming in. It's just going to race a little bit differently than it has in the past here, especially here in the Cup Series. So we're still looking to the guys, obviously, that do great here year after year. There are some really good options there, but I wouldn't be too worried about track history. I know I like to look at track history more at short tracks, but I think just with the way it is, I think it's going to be pretty random. I think there's going to be pit strategy that messes things up. Like tire strategy, we'll definitely see guys stay out on two tires, on no tires, just for that track position, and get everything all mumble jumbled, and hopefully lead to some cautions, but it's not seeming like there are going to be very many cautions this week. It's a very predictable race, so being just super anti-chalk probably won't get me too far. But luckily, there's so many different options. I think that there are some guys that set up really nicely as pivots that, just with how pricing is and how people kind of are predictable with these sort of things, we can use that to our advantage. So starting right here with Kyle Busch, I'm going to just dart down the field here. So it's already Saturday, and I'm trying to get this out soon. And again, it might be useless with the inspection coming up here. So you run down the field, Kyle Busch, fastest car, has dominated here the last two times. Averages 90 lead laps on the season, 56 fast laps. Here doesn't have the doesn't have quite as many lead laps historically, at least not compared to what we're used to seeing. But you know, he's done things like he's come from the back here and gone up, had a really, really good finish, put up a ton of points. I think it was this spring race last year. He started 32nd, won the race, only put up 32 lead and fast laps pretty much, but still enough to get you over 100 fantasy points just starting way there in the back. And you've got a few guys like Blaney in that position do that sort of thing this week. Just, you know, proof that you can be an expensive guy and just get it all done through place differential. And if you just get enough fast laps, you know, you'll get there. You'll hit that 100 threshold that you're really trying to hit with your guys this week. So Kyle Busch, he's the super favorite. Right now he's plus 175 to win the race, with the closest besides him being Kevin Harvick at plus 450, and then Joey Logano at plus 800. So yeah, we haven't seen a favorite like this in a little while, but he's just been dominating. He's been crushing. Won at Bristol, with a bad car too. Won Auto Club in Phoenix. Didn't have the fastest car in Phoenix, but he was very close. It was pretty much him and Blaney that had the fastest car. Kyle Busch had the fastest average lap speed, but Ryan Blaney had the fastest lap, and he had the fastest 10 and 30 lap averages. Of course, this is a track where he has sucked at historically, but we'll talk about Blaney in a second here. So Kyle Busch, $13,000, like 15,000, is it 15? It's like 15,300 on FanDuel, starting to look like Luka Doncic when he was in the EuroLeague, like just super expensive. Worth it, of course. Doesn't really matter what price they are. If, you know, we look back to the historical records here, we've saw that guys like Brad Keselowski, Matt Kenseth, they've led over 350 laps here at a time. Kurt Busch in 2015 led 291 laps. And it doesn't matter what price they are. When they're dropping scores like 188 or 190 fantasy points, you pay that no matter what. Kyle Busch is definitely the favorite to do that. He's going to be, I would imagine his price tag keeps him from being too chalky. We kind of saw that last week. And last week he disappointed even as a winner. I don't even think he was in the optimal. I don't think that he was in the optimal last week, even though he won, just because he didn't dominate. But still, he's pretty much leads lap. Like, he leads laps like every single week, it seems. His practice times, and especially him leading in 10 lap averages, will probably get him some ownership, but you really got to work for it at such an expensive price. And the guy after him, Harvick, will take a lot of his ownership off since he has the pole here. You have fast long run speeds, the fastest 20 lap average of all, what, four guys it took him? So he's faster than Eric Jones, Stenhouse, and Bowman. So not really sure what that says of him. He was second to Kyle Busch only in the 15 lap speeds. But he gets the pole. You know, looked pretty good in qualifying there. Has looks like he has seven top five finishes in his last nine starts here. Winner in 2013. I think he's only won this thing once or twice. But still, you know, this is not a place where he dominates a whole lot, actually. Averages just 14 lead laps here at Richmond. Really just chills out in the top, like, five or seven or so. And just kind of sits there all race. But, you know, with the pole, whenever it's a short track, we love the pole sitter. The pole sitter here averages over 100 laps led. And that's 25 fantasy points for you right there. You throw in the extra 20 fantasy points for the fast laps, and you're looking good to pay off a 12-3 price tag. Although it's getting harder and harder to pay off these really expensive studs up here. You've also got Joey Logano, who's super expensive at $11,800. He's pretty much going to be what he's been the last few weeks. This guy that's just very expensive and nobody plays. He's had such low ownership and he's looked so great through these races. And then he just has something go wrong, puts out a crappy finish, screws me over, ruins my hopes and dreams. And then as soon as you decide to give him a break for a second, he comes and finishes third at Bristol. That's what it'll do to you. With such an expensive price on DraftKings, I think he's going to be very, very low owned. Would love to have a bit of him. It's like him and Keselowski switch spots this week, is where he gets to be the egregiously overpriced one. And we've seen Keselowski in that position at Dover and, you know, recently at Bristol. You know, him and Logano just kind of snuck himself up there out of nowhere. Didn't end up getting past Kyle Busch, but they're still right there in position, and they had like 10% ownership each, maybe ranging between like 8 and 13% for these guys. So very, very, very cheap. Penske looks awesome this year. You know, they're kind of really giving Toyota the nod. They really do think Kyle Busch is going to win again. And, you know, it is a short track, and it is Kyle Busch. That does make a lot of sense. Vegas hates losing money. But, yeah, Logano and Keselowski have the exact same odds on Vegas right now. It's just Keselowski is $1,200 less expensive. Now, he put up some really, really bad lap times in practice, but again, I'm not too worried about it. Probably experimenting, maybe, you know, working some suboptimal lines just to see what's there. You know, Keselowski does that a lot. Logano does that a lot. Harvick does that a lot. These guys I'm never too scared off of with bad practice times. And like I mentioned earlier coming in, I'm going to use that to my advantage and just kind of, you know, use a whole bunch of these guys here. Just going to keep rolling Penske. Just, you know, it's been working out for me so far, so good. We've seen a lot of speed out of those three Penske Fords, all three of them. Don't mind any of them. I know everyone's going to be using Blaney, but I'm really going to, you know, with Blaney's expensive price at $11,100, definitely his most expensive price of all time. People are going to really have to pay up for that, and I think, especially with Kyle Busch and Kevin Harvick being guys that people really want to roster, Logano and Keselowski are going to go by the wayside. Keselowski does average 70 lead laps here and 34 fast laps because, you know, he had that crazy, crazy dominance the 1 year. I think it's going to get people on him, especially that and just the fact that they've seen this price swap for pretty much no reason. People are going to be like, cool, I can finally afford to play Keselowski. And he might push like 20% or something. But Logano is going to go completely forgotten about. I love him as an alternate dominator once again this week. It's just not as great as it has been the last few weeks because he does have to deal with Kyle Busch right behind him and Kevin Harvick in front of him, which is not the ideal situation. But I do think he can get around Jones and Kurt Busch off the bat. So Blaney, let's go back and talk about him here. Fifth in the 10-lap averages. Just could not get it going in qualifying whatsoever with the new quick qualifying that they've got going on. We might see these situations arise a little bit more now with the you know, the enhanced qualifications, but I digress. He has an average lap rank of 5th in average green lap speed and 4.6 in 30 lap averages. That is the second best of anyone here. Ryan Blaney has had a fast car all year long. He's just going to what is probably his worst track, where he's never finished better than 18th. And when you look at Phoenix again, like I said, fastest car there. You know, really feeling Blaney. I don't really. It's just the price. It's so hard to play Logano and Keselowski when you play Blaney here. He's a very, very, very interesting fade, but I think starting 29th, he'll probably get on an alternate sort of pit cycle, maybe steal lead laps from it, maybe steal fast laps from it. I think he'll just be able to vulture enough of these fast laps and lead laps, which he's averaging 25 and 50 of on the season, that I think he'll be able to, you know, make value as long as he finishes top 10, which he really should, barring trouble. Now, moving on down to Kurt Busch here, talk of the town, just having a really good season. Second in average lap speeds in the first practice there. $10,200, expensive once again. He was chalky last week, you know, with him starting way, way in the back. But this week's going to be very different, starting third. You kind of need him to dominate, and that's something he has done here once, but I mean, he's probably done it more, but at least in this generation of car, he's had pretty much one large chunk of dominance from a little while ago. This year is averaging 5 lead laps, 10 fast laps. I don't know how you can afford to pay up for a $10,200 guy that does that. Even if he's finishing top 10 every race, that's not really going to help you out here. At a 400-lap track, he's going to need to find the lead off the bat, and he can do that. I'm not saying he won't. He just doesn't usually. He's stubborn when it comes to dominating. Sort of like Logano with the fast laps. They're just not huge on him. You've also got Martin Truex Jr. here. Now he's either not led here or he's led like 150 plus. When he finds the lead, you've got to watch out because Truex, I mean, he's shown on multiple occasions that he can put out a beating. In those three races, he had 88, 47, and 84 fast laps. So all three of those scores are over 100. Of course, if he does it again, you would definitely need him. So yeah, Martin Truex Jr., feeling the play, third last time we were here in the 2018 fall race. I think actually, if I recall correctly, yeah, all three of the times he has dominated this track and put up over 150 lead laps, they were all in the fall race, for what it's worth. Yeah, when you look at his recent speeds, my stomach is yelling at me. I might have to go feed it. When you look at his recent speeds on Martin Truex Jr. here, last few weeks has kind of tailed off a little bit. His car was lightning fast in Atlanta, probably one of the best in the entire board. Pretty fast in Las Vegas, between like 5th and 7th. Phoenix around 4th, 5th or so, still pretty fast, 2nd in average speeds there. Then kind of slowed down a little bit in Auto Club. Martinsville, just mediocre, 5th in average speed, but like 9th and 10th in all of the lap averages. Truex, Texas was where he really kind of struggled. He's down the teens in speeds. And then at Bristol, you know, nothing really special. No split above, you know, like a 7th. He was 7th in 10 lap average, but nothing more impressive than that. His fastest lap was 15th on the board. So this season, he hasn't really shown the kind of speeds that he would in the Furniture Row Racing car, but still, you know, it's just shocking to me how he hasn't won a short track with, you know, how good he is at places like this. You know, he averages 56 lead laps, 25 fast laps. It's pretty darn good. Starting 6th, he does have to get around Kyle Busch, Kevin Harvick, Logano immediately, and that does stink. Even Kurt Busch is hard to get around at first. So, yeah, I think he's a good alternate dominator play. He might be forgotten about, but I don't think he will. I think people definitely remember him. He's 3rd in the top 5 odds, and you know, if you look at his top 5 percentage, it's 23%. No, I lied. It's 50%. That's what it is. At the short and flat tracks, that's tied with Kevin Harvick for the 2nd best score on the board there, behind Kyle Busch, of course, who does that 68% of the time. But you get him at a massive discount compared to those two. I do like Martin Truex here. I maybe can spirit the energy of Carl Edwards, who bequeathed him his car in the first place. Well, no, it was kind of second. It was secondary hand-me-downs from Suarez, but still. If you can channel his inner Edwards and maybe even do like an inner backflip, you should have no problem doing well here. I know it's not analysis, but it's filler. Wait, why am I doing filler? I'm trying to hurry here. Digressed enough. Chase Elliott. My boy. Look how they massacred my boy last week. It was not a good play off the pole. No, the one time I endorsed him the entire year, he sucked. So that's been the song and dance with Elliott for a little while now. 4th and 2nd here at this race last year. You know, very good at short track racing, man. We like him at short tracks. You know, Bristol, so good there. You can see like Larson do well here. Usually Chase and Kyle Larson tend to, you know, do well at the same types of tracks. But you know, he's even with the recent speeds that he's shown, he's probably going to be a guy just that goes under the wayside here. Starting 7th, he's behind Truex, behind Kevin Harvick, Kyle Busch. I think he's going to chill in the top 10 all race, but I don't see him having what it takes to push past anyone. He put down the most laps in practice, but there wasn't really, there weren't like problems with the car or anything. It was okay. Just was really just trying to get it to cooperate a little bit more. Turn a little more in the corner, but Don't mind. Actually, I do mind. I don't know. Like, I'm tired of even saying anything about Chase because I love him. But I don't know. Maybe I should start doing what I do in golf and just playing him no matter what. You know, Stenson, I just play him 30% in every field he's in. And, you know, it's been great so far, honestly. Looking pretty good right now. But Chase might have to start doing that soon. But it's harder to in NASCAR because usually that eats into people that I really, really want to get exposure to. And whenever I can fade Chase, I usually do so very happily. And this is probably one of those times. But if he does dominate, and there's probably like a 5% chance he does, if he does, and he gets stuck out there in front again, like he's sort of kind of been doing over the last few weeks, different tracks, it could cause a little, that could be a recipe for disaster. I think he's going to be lower owned, so he won't completely kill you if something like that happens. But again, if you play him and expect it to happen, it probably is not going to. He's probably just going to chill top 10 all race and do nothing. But you never really know with him. $9,500, that is not a discount at all. He is priced quite up. Probably for those finishes last year. I think that DraftKings really, their algorithm really looks at the last three races when it comes to pricing your guy. That's kind of what I theorized. Although my next guy kind of, I guess, disproves that a little bit, because Larson has finished 7th, 7th, 1st, and 1st here over the last three races. And he's $9,200, which is still a pretty decent price for Larson, about where he should be, but he should be priced right next to Elliott pretty much every slate. But he does come in as a bit of a non-favorite here. He was plus 2,200 compared to Chase Elliott's plus 1,300. Starting back in 14th, he did have the fastest lap in practice, tied with Denny Hamlin, pretty much. They put very, very, very similar lap times together. Now, I'm just going to say this right now. Hamlin's going to be way more popular than Larson. Larson's starting 14th, which is a bit of a sort of dead zone, although I do like starting in the top 15 at this track. If I'm going to pick guys in the top 15 at any track, it's going to be like here or at Phoenix or Darlington, you know, those sort of tracks where it's just about staying up in front and collecting all those laps. But Larson, he's been a real pain in the butt, definitely a big pain in the butt lately. It was chalky last week and kind of screwed everybody, and he's really just screwed me a lot this season. But after like last season, I think the 2016 season also, he was really, really, really good to me. I think I got him when he was like, I kept playing him at the 2 mile tracks that he just kept dominating on, and that was working out pretty well. Larson this year so far, he's shown potential to be like an upside sort of alternate dominator guy, like a Hamlin, like a Keselowski, for cheaper. It's just that he's rated the courses or the tracks that he's rated out well at, he's just not like performed at. Some of it has been just bum luck, but he's actually not really a value if you look at the Vegas odds, like top fives and stuff. The only thing you're really playing him for is practice and his, you know, pretty darn good history here. And I guess the price is a little bit cheaper, but really, really, I'm going to be playing him just to get off of Hamlin, which I'm probably not going to do anyway. I'm probably just going to play Hamlin with everyone else because everyone seems to be on the same mentality when it comes to Hamlin. We just generally avoid him unless it's like his track, one of his tracks, and we all play him. What was it? Like a few weeks ago. I don't know why I'm not remembering this. I think it was Auto Club or Phoenix, one of those two. No, it was Martinsville. That's definitely what it was. So Martinsville, you know, people have been avoiding playing too much Hamlin all season long, even though he had won the Daytona 500 and was fifth in Phoenix. Martinsville, everyone just kind of knew to play him because that's like one of his tracks that he's super good at. And he was like over 30% owned. And then he won at Texas, but he was like, I don't even know. Like, he was like somewhere between like 8 and 15%, or just like super low owned. Like, everyone forgot about him. And, you know, that's kind of what I hope people do here. They probably won't. He had the second fastest practice time behind Larson, and his price is only $8,900, which is crazy cheap for him. Rates out is our best play, even without a lot of dominator points. Starting back in 18th, he was finished 6th or better in 6 of his last 7 attempts here at at Richmond. He's won here three times. He's, you know, this is just one of his better tracks, and he's from the area too. This is a home field advantage sort of track for him. So, yeah, Denny Hamlin, great cash play. I don't know how Chalky is going to be, probably 30% or so. He's got Bowyer right there starting back in 21st, and also Larson with the history and the practice times, and, you know, Truex in the vicinity. The plays underneath him are kind of crappy until you get to Almirola, but still Bowyer and Larson should be enough to keep him from being crazy, but I'm just kind of eyeing Bowyer of anyone in this range, because I think that all the ownership is going to go to places outside of him, even though he's starting in 21st. So for Hamlin, I'll, as usual, just like getting exposure to him as a dominator. But I think instead of an alternate dominator, I think he's going to be a regular dominator this week. I think he's definitely going to find his way to the top five. You know, Phoenix, his speed was pretty much always sixth or seventh on the board. On the season, it's been 7th or 8th, and that's about where he belongs usually. That should get him up about 11 to 12 spots, and he also has a chance to lead laps, so that's really what you want out of an 8K guy. But Clint Bowyer, at $8,600, he has a teammate in Almirola starting 15th, who's pretty much the same play as him, but $1,200 cheaper, just like Logano. And I think just like Logano, he's going to be way under-owned because of it. He shouldn't have any ship ownership, or he shouldn't have any ownership stolen from him being near Jimmy Johnson. But Jimmy Johnson was literally just over 30% owned last week. And he's at a track where, in his last 9 finishes, he's had no finish worse than 11th at this track. So, I know Jimmy's starting 10th, but the adoring public are still going to play him and get him into the teens for some reason. And he's honestly been playing a little bit better this year also. I will give him that. But Clint Bowyer is who I'm eyeing starting 21st. It's not the sexiest starting spot, even though it is very good place differential for him. He was 3rd in 10 and 30 lap averages in Phoenix. Looked very good in Phoenix. Top 10 at this race in both of the races last year. And if you look at them a little bit further, and you go to just the historical section, and you just filter out Bowyer. You can see it's really nice to do this. Just see all of his finishes here in a row. You can do that for any driver you want. You will notice that last year, he led 18 and 19 laps in the two different, or no, he had 18 and 19 fast laps at this track with 45 lead laps in the spring race. So very, very interested in Bowyer there. I don't think a lot of people are going to remember or realize that. But definitely like getting some Bowyer. I don't care about practice times. He's going to be a play I'm going to go out of my way to play extra of, because I think he's going to fall beneath the cracks for a lot of guys. He was saying that he did not like his car in practice, which I know. Playing guys who don't like their car, it's not great, but you're just doing it for the ownership. Hoping that word gets out about that, and, you know, just hoping that people don't play him because of it. He's in kind of a weird, awkward spot in 21st where it's, you know, we know it's a good play. It's technically technically the back half of the field. Doesn't really feel like it too much, but it's a short track. It's Clint Bowyer. I'm playing him. It's too darn good at Phoenix for me to ignore starting this position. And if you're going to give me a little less ownership than I think he deserves, I'm all about it. I'm going to go out of my way to make that a stand. I'm not saying that I think that Clint Bowyer is just going to dominate this race because he has the best car. I do believe that he is struggling with his car. I believe him with that, but it's a longer race. They'll get it figured out in time. It's Stewart Haas Racing. Honestly, you could just have it figured out sooner than later. You know, how often do we see guys just, you know, complain about their car and not like it? You know, just last week with Kyle Busch, and they go out there and win. And Clint Bowyer can do that too. We about saw that in Phoenix. His car was always a threat in the top three, especially on the long runs and stuff. And, you know, if it's going to go greener, I guess, you know, and with him not needing at that price, he probably doesn't need to lead. Just get some fast laps there. Yeah, I could see Bowyer being a great little leverage play there. Skipping past Jimmy Johnson because he sucks. No, I'll I'm not gonna play him or anything starting 10th, but his history here is pretty darn good, with all those top 11s in a row. I just think that he always gets a little more overowned than he deserves. It's hard to really be overweight on Jimmy Johnson optimally. Erik Jones, $8,000 starting on the outside behind Kevin Harvick. Doesn't really stand much of a chance there. Has been good at this track. Crashed out in the 2017 spring race. I get that. He crashed out like immediately. Just tossed that one out, which we do with our stats, of course. Always got to get rid of the DNFs, but outside of that, 6th, 13th, and 11th. Pretty good here. $8,000 is not a bad price tag. Just starting second, he'll have to hang out top five all race. He did not do that Phoenix whatsoever. Got into trouble there. And even on the season, average green flag speed, 17th in NASCAR. That's, that's not great, but the practice times are there. The longer run stuff. He's just going, I'm just going to play maybe like 5, 10% just in case he does find a lead out at front for some reason, or even, he could just hang out top five all day and then just so happen to be gifted the lead or something. He's not a guy I see not dominating it or not dominating at all. Like I do certain guys that I just don't really have that sort of respect for. He's pretty similar to like Kurt Busch for me, where I know he can lead laps and does sometimes, just, not too often, usually at certain types of tracks. And this is one of those types of tracks. Moving down along to Eric Almirola, the guy I think everybody's going to play. 10-lap average this year, 4.5. That is second of anybody in NASCAR. That's very good. Only behind Kyle Busch in that regard. And 7.7 in the 30-lap averages. Nothing to scoff at there. If you just look at fast-lap averages, he's right behind Kyle Busch at 5.7. Kyle Busch is at 5.3. And the next closest after him is Kevin Harvick at 6.4. He has been steady Eddie all year long. It's been a rock-solid FanDuel play all year long. And he's actually done really well here in the past. Finished 5th in the fall race last year. But even with Richard Petty Motorsports, he's gotten a 4th place here back in 2015. Another top 10 in 2017, the spring race. So this is a good track for him. Definitely had top 10 speed at Phoenix, that's for sure. 10th in the average lap speeds in practice so far. Very, very cheap, $7,700. I think everyone's going to notice that. We're very used to him being in the 8,000s. And he even ventured into the 9,000s earlier this season. And not much has changed with his form, honestly, really. He's still getting lots and lots of top 10s. Just wrecked out in Bristol. It's literally one DNF. He had that and Daytona. Other than that, it's all top 10s. And I don't really expect much else from Almirola. He's going to work his way up from 15th for $7,700, just way too cheap. I like eating that sort of chalk right there, but again, I also like getting Bowyer because everyone's going to be drawn to Almirola and just some of the other plays down here, which just lends itself to such a Stars and Scrubs lineup where you get like a Dominator, you get Blaney, and then you get like, you go for some of the freer plays like Ryan Newman, and then you just kind of fill out value from there, but I think they'll get people off of Bowyer. Again, it's just the read I'm making on the slate. Don't think Bowyer is like a prize gift or anything we've been bestowed upon from the gods. But just how I'm going to attack this slate, man. Daniel Suarez, $7,500. Starting 9th has been so much better lately. And this is a track he has a very good record at as well, top 20 every single time, and 2 of his 4 races he finished in the top 10. Of course, last week he was up there. I think he actually had Dominator points. Yeah, he had, he only had 1% of the Dominator points. He found himself up there for a little tiny bit. Still could use some, fast lap love, but was up and around the top 10 all race long, even though he qualified like top 5. Just really showed that track position, he could use that and just hang on to it for dear life. He's finished 12th or better five of his last 6 races, and also a 13th in there, so I guess I could have said, really, he's, if you go back to Daytona, he's finished 13th or better in every race, except for Phoenix, and so, unfortunately, that's the one track that I am really looking to this week, but still, A lot of tops, top 12 upside starting ninth, $7,500. A play I'll get some, you know, some exposure to, but not too thrilled about it or anything. He was sixth in final practice, which should get some eyeballs on him, but I think the price still keeps people from getting him past like the teens in ownership. I just like, you know, where he's at right now in his Stuart Haas Racing Ford, getting used to that. At a really good track, I think he has top five upside. I think he can actually move up from ninth. And I don't say that about a lot of guys that are in the 7K range and qualify this high. Usually I'm just auto fading these guys. We'll get to a few of them here soon, but I actually do have a little respect for Suarez this week. You got Ricky Stenhouse Jr., who screwed me over, taught me that, you know, you should never trust Ricky, of course. Ricky went full Ricky lap one and just started wrecking people, so yay. Terrific week. Wonderful week. I love it. I expect his ownership to kind of fall off a little bit. I think he has, like, really good numbers on FanDuel or something, which keeps people owning him. Like, he has a really high average fantasy point, like, average or something. But this is a track he's actually been kind of low-key okay at. Fourth in the spring race in 2017. 13th most recently. But still, starting 16th, I think he can move up there. He can get a top 10. I just don't like his odds. I prefer just going elsewhere. Even Bowman at $7,100, you're saving $200 and getting one extra spot he can move up. And Bowman is extremely good at Phoenix, and that's the track I'm looking to for this week. So I'm gonna roll a little Bowman over Stenhouse. I know it seems a little reactionary, but I definitely did learn my lesson. If he goes out and kills it, you know, not gonna be too worried about that. It's just how I'm going to play this slate here. Bowman has better odds too. We saw Stenhouse go from 100-1 to 150-1. Just fallen off a little bit, and Bowman was 100-1, but only fell off to 125-1, and starts a spot farther back than him, and actually finished a spot ahead of him, mostly recently at this race, finishing 12th. Right, he's finished 12th and 18th, and Dale Jr.'s 88 here at this track. So those aren't bad numbers by any mean, or any means. Took some good long runs of practice as well. Before I talk about the obvious chalk here, Austin Dillon, kind of an obvious fade, starting 8th. I know he finished 6th in the fall race last year, but other than that, it's not the greatest of histories for him here. All his average speeds pretty much tell you he's going to be a 10th to 15th place sort of car every week, and that is going backwards a little bit. I know the price is cheap, but his brother is just a way better play this week, trust me. $6,900, Ryan Newman, projected to be the highest owned play on the board, perhaps, maybe, I don't know, Ryan Blaney might beat him, but Newman is too cheap, and he's too good at this track. Starting 31st for $6,900. At Phoenix, his speeds were in between 11th and 12th, you know, 11th and the 10th and or 10 and 30 lap averages. In 2017, he destroyed this track, finishing 7th and 3rd. He also had a third place finish back in 2013. That started a streak of top 10s for him. He crashed the spring race here last year, but followed up with a 15th in the fall race. Not bad. An 85 driver rating at Richmond. Way better than anyone else in this range. And 83 long-term at short tracks. 78 driver rating. When you look at the recent short and flat tracks. And, you know, it's better than Byron, Newman. Bowman, Stenhouse, these guys, he's just a step above them. Even if he was, you know, starting in a normal spot, I'd still probably prefer him right now, just with the type of track it is and the fact that, you know, blocking is going to be so huge. That's why I kind of like him and Logano a little extra. It's just skill sets they have. Newman, unfortunately, is going to be like the chalk. I don't like eating too much chalk this week, but I think I am, honestly. I'm just going to try to be different elsewhere. I'm just gonna have to give up on some other plays. Like Di Benedetto will probably fall by the wayside here. He's starting in 27th and will also probably be pretty popular. He's had some good finishes recently. He's 12th last week at Bristol. He's gonna get a lot of eyes on him, but that's like his best track. This is one of his worst tracks. He finished 16th in the spring race here last year, and that was pretty nice. But other than that, it's like 30th or worse every time. I know it was in worse equipment and all. And his speeds are right around 20th, 21st place, starting back in 27th. It's not too bad of a deal there, but he's also adorning the advertisement. The he has the spray decal. Oh, what am I trying to say? His sponsor is a sponsor of the race, Toyota owners. He's got that all over his Toyota. Not sure if that'll bring a little extra pressure or if they'll juice his car up a little bit to get a little more advertisement out there. But I'm going to generally not stay away, but just kind of mindfully go a little underweight on him and just hope that, you know, taking a whole bunch of Newman just works out. That's a guy I don't really feel all that scared of taking a whole bunch of, and if he kills me, hey, he kills me. But you know, Ryan Newman and I have been through a lot. I think I can trust him with this. Take a good 70% or so. I don't recommend you guys doing that, of course. It's probably better to just fade the chalk and hope something happens, but you know, it seemed like a green flag race, and I don't know, with how Newman feels, that's what I'm going to be doing. But anyway, let's roll through the rest of this. Got about an hour-long podcast here right now. I want to give you guys at least time to listen to it before the race starts. So, rapid fire here. Starting with William Byron, starting 19th. I like that. 11th fastest lap in Phoenix. 13th 10-lap average. Of course, that is probably his best track, but here he's not shabby at. Top 20 in both of his finishes here last year. 12th in that spring race. I like him to move up some spots and just get you off of DiBenedetto or, I don't know, just other guys in this range. We got Paul Menard starting 13th. Anytime any sort of drafting is involved, you want to get yourself some Menard. I don't know if there will be a ton this week, but it's just something to keep in mind. Starting 13th is a little high, but he is really cheap in price at 6,600. The track position is really killer here. I don't think he's going to lead laps, but you never really know. Him just staying in the top 15, honestly, will probably get you some very good value out of him. Chris Buescher starting 11th. He's starting 11th, but his practice times were off the chain. Third fastest lap, second in 10-lap averages. I'm definitely going to fade that because, you know, his ninth in average lap speed, fourth of the 13 cars that took 15 lap speeds, sixth and fifth lap speeds. I know it's really fast still. I'm not really making too much of a case against him, but I think that a lot of people are going to own him, and with him starting 11th, that gives him a real glass floor. He couldn't have looked much better last week at Bristol. He was like in the top five legitimately, and he could follow that up. He really could. I just am willing to gamble on something happening to him, because starting 11th, even if you go back to like 20th or something, that'll kill you. And if you crash, go all the way to the back, that murders any lineup. I don't really know if I want to mess with that. I love Buescher, but I will take him next week after he fails this week. And, you know, maybe he'll start like 28th or something, and I'll get him for less ownership. That's what I'm hoping for. Skip Priest, because he sucks. Daniel Hemric at $6,200. Doesn't suck as much, but I don't really feel him that much. He finished 32nd here last year. Starting 24th, no thank you on Daniel Hemric. I am all about Mr. Ty Dillon, $6,100. About time he stopped qualifying in the teens. 12th in 5-lap averages, 11th in 10-lap averages. Your boy Ty Dillon, just great at keeping his car in one piece, finishing on the lead lap. He does that more. I don't think he actually doesn't have a lead lap finish this year. It was I think it was a year or two ago. No, I was looking at the wrong guy. He has 41% of his races have been lead lap finishes over the last year or two, and that's better than anyone until you go all the way up to Menard, which makes a lot of sense. So Menard and Ty Dillon stick out in that statistical category, but it's a laps finish. He's finished 99% of his laps at these short and flat tracks. Very good at this kind of track in particular, and that reminds me of something I wanted to tell you guys. Again, another new thing that I added under the research station. It's just called track types, and you can just see how everyone's driving rate or driver ratings at all the different track types over the last few year, and then I kind of combined them to sort of pull a golfy stat and do a driver rating gained. I didn't put it as that. It's a little cringy for me, but you know, I have it set as to the field, so you can see, you know, if it's like 150%, they score basically 1.5 times as much as your average person in the field in driver rating. Well, I have that with both driver rating and dominator points too, which is very helpful. And then I compare how you know, how many driver rating or dominator points they gain to the field on average versus at different track types. And that really helps you pinpoint who actually benefits the most from these types of tracks. And just looking at the short and flat tracks right now, Kyle Busch, Brad Keselowski, Ryan Newman, Denny Hamlin, Chase Elliott. We've already been talking about these guys. We know that they are very good at these types of tracks. You see Bowyer and Almirola there as well, already on these guys. It's going to be a really awesome tool just under the research station, under track types. And yeah, going back to finish off this crappy field here, 6,000 and under, I'm going to steamroll it. Ross Chastain starting last, so you can play him. Bubba Wallace, he is starting 26th. He still has less money, mo issues, kind of problems right now with his team, but decent enough history here, decent enough practice times. I'll just have him as a guy to let the optimizer use, but and not just like uncheck, but not, you know, I wouldn't be sad if the optimizer used none of him also. One of those kind of guys, you know, just a leeway sort of dude. David Ragan, he had the fifth fastest lap in practice. A bit of an anomaly. Just a random kind of killer lap. Not a mistake, I checked it. Just a really good kind of out there lap. You look in practice one, you can see when he got it. He had some pretty, you know, he had led up to it pretty well. Just had a good 3-lap run there. And put a 22-22 down. So his car, you know, it has maybe a little bit of speed here, but he's never really shown that in the past. On the season, you know, in Phoenix, he was 30th in average green flag speed. On the season, he's 27th in that, 28th in 10-lap averages, and also 28th in 30-lap averages. That is just not good. I feel like he's going to go backwards, but he is rating out a little bit better this week than he does usually. But starting 22nd, I know I'm not using many of these guys down here. I just want to keep using Ty Dillon, honestly. I'm just going to pile on these dudes. I've got Michael McDowell, who everyone's kind of still forgotten about, but 8th and 15-lap speeds? I mean, the guys he beat weren't impressive, like Ricky Stenhouse and his teammate David Ragan, but it's something. He put together more laps than I'd expect him to for someone so cheap. Just has a really cheap price tag, 25th. Finally, it's about time he stops qualifying in the top 20. I guess he's a place somewhat similar to Ty Dillon. I'll have a little bit of him, but not as not quite as thrilled. Honestly, would rather use Chastain just because he starts last. And then going down to the super scrubs, Matt Tift, he sucks and he starts 20th. Don't play him. Corey LaJoie, not his track. You know, you might be able to play him, but again, not his track and also not Matt DiBenedetto's track, which he's in Matt DiBenedetto's car. So you always want to cross-reference there with those two. So not a play there. Landon Castle, this dude has been, with a slow car, he's just been churning out awesome finish after awesome finish. Four straight top 30 finishes for him. And I know it doesn't sound that impressive, but given his equipment and all that, I mean, hats off to him, Mr. Landon. Starts 32nd. Finished 21st here. Back in 2017 in the spring race. Hasn't been great ever since. It's a true gamble play, but of all the super scrubs, I guess it would be the one I play. And the four guys after this aren't even worth mentioning. Half Curry, Gaze, Burton. Fade them all. Maybe play a little bit of Burton. He showed to at least be somewhere sort of near the pace. And I guess Curry too for that matter, but I'm not going to get caught up on these guys who are just going a million laps down. Even with Castle, they're just going to go a million laps down pretty quickly. Going to focus more on my core of plays, which is pretty much Ty Dillon. I like a little Menard, Byron, of course. Newman, just kind of eating chalk there. I will still have some DiBenedetto. And then some Alex Bowman, Suarez, Almirola, Bowyer. It's kind of my goal. And then up top, the Dominators. Like I said, I'm being trying to be a little different this week. Of course, you got to have your Kyle Busch because you're kind of weird if you don't. And then Kevin Harvick on the pole also. Again, kind of weird if you don't. But you got to make darn sure I get my Logano in there, get my Keselowski in there, Hamlin. Those are probably, along with Truex, those are probably the only guys I really care to like ham-fist into Dominators. So other than that, that's pretty much my pool there. So, all right, it's time to get this uploaded so you guys can listen to it already. I will see you guys in a bit when we sweat this race together. Remember, guys, if you want to join the DFS Army, you've probably seen us all over the NASCAR leaderboards. We're just cool like that. So if you want to come join us and also be cool like that, DFSArmy.com, promo code TACO, to help support that pod and to help support my face and my brand new beautiful baby that I'm about to go hug. And yeah, I'll see you guys next week at Talladega. See ya.